On Sunday, March 22nd at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents composer, vocalist, multi-instrumentalist Carmen Lundy. Join us as we discuss Carmen Lundy's career and spend a little time with vocalist Tana Alexa, who has her first CD release as a leader at Subculture. That's Sunday, March 22nd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
The Pacifica Radio Archives celebrates Women's History Month.
I had always had this pride, this fierce, sterile almost kind of pride, because my grandmother had said, "You must be proud," but she never told me all the horror of her background. One didn't talk about it, you see, and then she died.
Lena Horne, 1917 to 2010, American singer, actress, and civil rights activist, talks about racial identity in the year 1966. Part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, American Women Making History and Culture, 1963 to 1982, funded in part by a grant from the National Historical Publications and Records Commission at the National Archives and Records Administration. For more information, visit us at pacificaradioarchives.org. I'm Sonali Kulhatkar. Thanks for keeping our women's history alive.
Thanks to you.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
And you are listening to radio station WBAI in New York, as the man said. The time is just about 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, and that means it's time for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday night. Joined tonight by Mike.
Good evening.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Present.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Well, it's been another action-packed week, technology-wise. I have all kinds of fun things to talk about. First, though, as promised, an update on the premium situation. We've made no progress. I'm sorry to say we've made absolutely no progress. Once again, we've reached out to management to try and get just the numbers. How many premiums do we have to deliver to the radio station? And that information has not been given to us, making it impossible for us to know how many premiums to deliver. It's a simple thing, you know. Give us a number and we'll make that number and bring it to the station. For some reason, I don't know what the reason is. Maybe someone's tied up in a dungeon someplace. We can't get that information. So here tonight, I am pledging, no pun intended, promising, vowing, swearing that we will deal with this situation one way or another. And what that means is that we will use whatever resources are at our disposal and are... being the hacker community. The hacker community will step in and get this information one way or another. If we have to use microwave beams outside an office building to get the data, we will get it.
How would that work?
I don't know how it would work, Mike, but we're going to learn it and we're going to do it, okay? We're going to get the information. By next week at this time, the situation will be dramatically improved. None of us will sleep. None of us will rest or eat or do anything until we get the situation resolved. I'm not exaggerating. This is not a laughing matter. Our listeners pledged, and they're going to get what's coming to them in a positive way. And we pledged to our listeners that we will make sure that you get what you pledged for last autumn, specifically the HopeX flash drives.
So don't write in and tell us that you're missing anything, because we're busy fixing this.
Unless no, tell us.
Yeah, but Bernie, you know, we know everybody's missing the flash drives from autumn. We know that.
Right,
but if you're missing something else, let us know.
Right.
We're going to work on all the other things from the autumn fundraiser, because we haven't delivered a single one, because we haven't been told how many to deliver in the first place. So again, we hereby vow that we are going to move mountains and get this taken care of, because it's intolerable. And we don't like intolerable things.
We don't even tolerate them.
We do not tolerate it. No, absolutely not. Okay, and we don't want to dwell on this. We want to thank our listeners for their continued support and understanding. Know that we are on your side doing everything we can. And please, do not punish the radio station for this. This is just a temporary problem that we will fix and make sure it does not happen again, one way or another. We have all kinds of other things to talk about tonight, things that have happened in the news. Why don't we just start right off with the big story, and then, of course, is Barbie. Yeah, Barbie dolls apparently will be spying on people in the very near future. Actually, I think that this is tremendous public relations for the company, because the doll's not even out yet, and everyone's talking about it. Hello Barbie is the name of the new model. It underscores the challenge toy companies face as they embrace new technology to innovate and remain current with a digital generation, and simultaneously navigating those privacy and safety issues with parents. Yeah, okay, great. But this Barbie doll is really kind of creepy, because it eavesdrops on what kids are saying to it. And apparently what it does, it sends whatever somebody says to the doll into the cloud and processes it. In many, many ways, like if you speak to your phone and ask it a question and it comes back with an answer, it's accessing something someplace. In this particular case, your kids will be talking to dolls, and something will be happening in the cloud, and it will respond back to you. Do I have that? I don't have a Barbie doll, so I don't know for sure.
How does it connect to the internet?
That's a good question.
Which is what I'm going to say, the internet instead of the cloud.
I would imagine that Barbie is a wireless device now and is communicating with a hotspot someplace, and kind of like a cell phone.
It's a Wi-Fi.
Okay. Goes over Wi-Fi. Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You do have to press a spot, use your finger to press a spot below her belly button before she starts listening.
Okay, and again, what kind of message is that sending to our children?
I don't know, but that's the rule. That's how it works.
Press a button under her belt. Really?
Yes. Well,
like a real person.
Or like a belt buckle. Exactly.
Can you imagine, though, when toddlers start doing that to real people, thinking that they're going to get answers that way?
I mean, some toddlers already do, so...
Well, maybe so.
Does she have a belly button? I don't even know if she's anatomically correct.
Yeah, I guess we have some Barbie research to do. Thing is, this is getting all kinds of talk all over the place. I think they're going to have to scale it back a bit. I guess the corporate response is that there's nothing to worry about. Am I correct on that, Bernie?
Well, that's certainly Mattel's response, that this is a wonderful thing, and that they can children can interact with the Barbie doll in new and exciting ways, and share their most intimate thoughts and feelings with Barbie in a private setting, as children have done for many years. But I guess it's not so private anymore, huh?
Well, here's their defense. Kids using Hello Barbie aren't only talking to a doll. They're talking directly to a toy conglomerate whose only interest in them is financial. It's creepy and creates a host of dangers for children and family. Oh, wait, that's not their statement. That's, I'm sorry, that's the opposition. Their statement is Mattel is committed to safety and security, and Hello Barbie conforms to applicable government standards, including the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. COPPA. Additionally, Hello Barbie's technology features a number of safeguards to ensure that stored data is secure and can't be accessed by unauthorized users. And I have a feeling that's not going to be true much longer.
Yeah, if they had just stopped before the last sentence and said, you know, we comply with COPPA, like COPPA's actually got some teeth to it. It's why you can't use Facebook if you're under 13 and not willing to lie about it. If they had just stopped there, maybe I would believe them. But then they go on to say, talk about the security of the stored data, and, you know, we just know that
but
it can't be true.
But most kids who use Barbie dolls are under 13, right? So yeah. That rule, that right. Facebook rule, won't apply to them. You'll have kids 5 years old communicating.
I mean, the reason that you can't use Facebook if you're under 13 is not because there's a rule against, you know, a law against providing internet services to under 13-year-olds. It's just that you can't, like, collect data on them and use that to market to them. And Facebook is like, well, if we can't collect data on you and market to you, we don't want you as a user of our service. So they say you can't come in.
I would love to be able to say, given my interactions with children in my own family and elsewhere and my feelings about parenting, I would love to say that there's sort of a hard limit that that society in general would say, I don't want my child connecting to the internet unless I have control over that, unless I can monitor that, unless I can you know, administrate that somehow. But I also know how many children's parents just hand them a telephone or a tablet whenever they're bored to just get their attention. So I would like to think better things than this are possible, but well, I know that it will very probably succeed as a toy.
You can install a Wi-Fi blocker or a cell phone blocker on your child to prevent any device from working near them. I think that's the solution that the companies are coming up with.
Or you could just give them a damn plastic doll like all the other past generations have had that you actually have to use your imagination a bit to hear back from.
Go ahead, Barney.
Emmanuel, I wonder if after all this outcry, Mattel will offer a service, it'll probably be a paid subscription service if they do that, whereby the parents can eavesdrop on what their child is saying to the Mattel corporate cloud computer and what the corporate cloud computer is telling their children through the Barbie doll, through a text-to-speech thing. Or that would maybe just be creepy, too. I don't know. It's just another... they're always looking for ways to generate revenue, and that's, you know, the recurring revenue thing is always a big thing in corporate America.
Yeah, they could market that maybe as Mata Hari Barbie or something.
Well, I'll tell you, this whole conversation is kind of creepy to me, and even just talking about Barbie dolls and off the hook is a real mind trip. But I wonder, you know, they say people who use Gmail and people who use these cloud-based services, they say that only machines are accessing and reading and things like that, and humans don't actually eavesdrop. Is that a fair assessment? That's what they say? That's their defense?
I don't buy it. Wasn't a Barbie doll hacked? Like,
well, okay. What I'm saying is, use your Barbie doll and threaten the life of the president or something. Tell your Barbie doll that you plan on bombing the White House and see if anybody responds. Of course, you'll be getting your 5-year-old in trouble and he'll be marked for life. But you'll be learning, and hopefully, you'll share that with us, and we can tell people just what the situation is. Same thing with Gmail. Go ahead and say all kinds of crazy things in Gmail and see what happens.
If a 5-year-old is listening and does that because they heard that on this program, would we be liable?
No, I'm not speaking directly to 5-year-olds because okay. We don't cater to 5-year-olds in this program. The parents will have to tell the 5-year-old to do that.
All right.
But if you're over 13, it's pretty good. Yeah, go ahead.
What I seem to recall a story, I don't know, it was 10 or 15 years ago, where there was a talking Barbie doll model. And there was also, Mattel also made the talking G.I. Joe model. And a bunch of hackers, hacktivists were going into toy stores and buying up quantities of both models and then swapping the modules between the G.I. Joe and the Barbie dolls. So they were like gender hacking. So the Barbie doll was like, go shoot the enemy, kill them dead, or, you know.
And then G.I. Joe was like, I want to go shopping and all that stuff.
So will this new Barbie doll be hacked in a similar way so that it will connect to a different cloud that who knows what will happen with that?
Yeah, I believe the project you're thinking of is a Yes Men thing.
Yeah,
I think that was in one of their films, and it really speaks to how inexpensive components are and sensors. And I mean, I don't know how much a Barbie doll costs, but these kinds of things that can hear and see and measure are all around us and in many products. And we have to be a bit more thoughtful about what you do and what you say, and just realize that there's all kinds of functionalities and features in products like this.
And maybe a word to the companies thinking about amazing gizmos along these lines. If you make them, we're going to hack them. And they're going to have all kinds of unintended consequences. And hopefully corporate America is ready for that.
What does this Barbie say to you? I'm curious.
You'll have to get your own Barbie and find out.
I was hoping that the mass media could tell me, but I guess
not.
Well,
this one is not out yet. This one, you'll have to wait, I think, until later in the year.
All right, so we'll do a follow-up.
When this does come out, if the toy company wants to send us one and we can interview it and see what happens.
I really think that the kinds of things people are going to be doing with products like these are going to be really amazing. To see, because you could play with this. I mean, imagine, I was imagining maybe running audio into a device like this so that it's not just using a microphone, but you could maybe run line level or some kind of regular line voltage in and maybe have a 3-hour long recording get processed by Mattel, maybe of, I don't know, a famous speech or something.
A denial of service attack on Mattel using Barbie as the instrument of delivery. Wow,
right.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, exactly like that. I mean, everybody can pick a different famous speech from history and make really long speeches and then get it hooked up in place of the microphone and, connect Barbie and have her just, spout off all kinds of stuff, famous orators from who knows when, or just maybe like all of NWA's albums or something. I don't know.
Well, then you'd be facing copyright issues. But yeah, it's definitely a worthwhile endeavor, and we look forward to playing with it. And I think they're going to cancel the project now. On to misbehavior by government officials and employees and things like that. Well, first of all, the State Department said on Friday it was implementing improvements, those are their words, to its unclassified email systems. In fact, it shut down the unclassified email system months after a breach in its networks. This is what they say. As part of the Department of State's ongoing effort to ensure the integrity of our unclassified networks against cyber attacks, the department is implementing improvements to the security of its main unclassified network during a short planned outage of some internet-linked systems. The department continues to monitor and respond to activity of concern on our classified networks. Such activity is something we take very seriously. However, it took them literally months to do this after they had malware.
The Department of State is responsible for communicating clearly the position of the United States on various, like, very important issues where miscommunication would be, you know, cost lives in a lot of cases. So that statement did not make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're either really good at what they do or really bad at what they do. But, you know, how does this make Hillary Clinton look? Because she bypassed the State Department to send her email messages, and I'm not hearing of any malware on Hillary Clinton's computers.
Well, who would know?
Yeah, who would know?
No way of knowing.
Exactly. They're saying that, we talked about this last week, Hillary Clinton using her own personal email instead of the State Department's governmental email. They're saying that official emails are not actually auto-archived. In fact, they weren't auto-archived until last month in February. And what that means is that whether or not an email was archived for public viewing later on, that decision was left to the person or the department involved in the email itself. So with all that knowledge, I'm just wondering why all the furor about Hillary Clinton doing this when pretty much everybody had the exact same ability to just erase what they didn't want the public to see.
Why the uproar? Because Hillary Clinton's running for president.
Okay. That's the only reason.
And her political opponents. What she did is probably, is clearly illegal and quite possibly, you know, wrong. But the reason it's in the news is because her political opponents are making a point of it.
Illegal? Is it really illegal? It's against, yeah, it's against the law. She could go to prison.
I don't know if it's criminal or civil or the details.
It was a White House policy that she was invited.
Well, here's the thing. Here's my question. If you knew, you worked for the State Department, and you knew that their computers were filled with malware, as many of us did, and that they weren't really doing anything about it because they didn't, would you feel compelled, even though it was the law, to keep using an insecure system to communicate issues of national security? I mean, you know, look at it in that view.
I don't think anyone except Hillary had the choice. The rest of the State Department was presumably forced to use this thing. So.
Well, no one's forced to use anything. Everybody could just hop onto whatever they want to hop onto and communicate that way.
What would you suggest?
Well, and also, people can make phone calls. They can meet in person. Not everything is documented. So to say that somebody has to always use a particular email account, it just seems overly simplistic and unenforceable.
Well, this is the enforcement. We're watching it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, courtesy of Fox News. I don't know. It just doesn't seem...
If she used Snapchat, it'd be even harder.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Maybe. Well, we've talked on this program before about Snapchat being not quite as private as people claim. But, you know, maybe she and Putin can be Snapchatting each other all the time.
Well, I'm just saying that people communicate in all different manners. And especially in this day and age where there's so many choices, it just seems really unrealistic to expect somebody to just follow one particular way of communicating. And I don't know. I'm open to finding out all the different ways that people choose to use. But this just seems... It just seems unrealistic to me. Here's another example, though, of misuse of computers or authority figures or what have you. Closer to home, the New York Police Department. They have identified two veteran police officers who allegedly used department computers to change Wikipedia pages on several high-profile police abuse cases, including the death of Eric Garner The two officers, their names were not released. That's my big gripe, that they don't release names. Don't work in police headquarters. They're assigned to two different units from separate from one another, and they're expected to be spoken to by the Internal Affairs Bureau. Now, Wikipedia is a publicly accessed and edited web encyclopedia, and according to a law enforcement source, this is their First Amendment right, but they are likely to only face a minor reprimand for using department computers for personal activity. They basically found 85 IP addresses registered to one police plaza, and they logged hundreds of edits to Wikipedia. And basically, they changed pages having to do with alleged police brutality, some dating back as many as 10 years. They include pages for the death of Eric Garner, Stop and Frisk, Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo. The Garner entry, as one example, was edited on December 3rd, shortly after a Staten Island grand jury decided not to indict NYPD officer Daniel Pantaleo for his death. Garner raised both his arms in the air, was replaced by Garner flailed his arms about as he spoke. While the sentence, Garner, who was considerably larger than any of the officers, continued to struggle with them, was added to the entry. Two edits were also made to the word chokehold, which was replaced by respiratory distress and chokehold headlock in separate mentions. Other Wikipedia users later removed some of those changes. Police officials directed none of the changes. That's according to a department spokesman. These were individuals acting on their own. But this has generated a bit of outrage, has not, Bernie?
I think so. And while it might be the police officers' protected First Amendment constitutional rights to express themselves on Wikipedia or any other public forum, they're using NYPD computers to do that is not only a violation of NYPD policy, which they should be disciplined for, but they were doing that on the taxpayer dime. You know, they were doing this on NYPD computers, they were being paid with public tax dollars. I think that should be criminally prosecuted as theft, but we know that won't happen because cops typically aren't held responsible for committing crimes like the rest of us are.
Bernie, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm willing to admit on the air, I don't work for a government agency, but I'm willing to admit on the air that I have at some point in my life used social media for non-work purposes, using my employer's computer on work time, and I don't care that about that. Like, and it's much better that they're doing this than, like, shooting innocent people, as so many of their colleagues do.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because I have in front of me an email from Bernie discussing this, making some very good points. For instance, why does NYPD only maintain records that can trace computer use for 1 year, how long they keep evidence of crimes? Some things that really made me think. But I couldn't help but look at the date stamp on this. It was Monday at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, Bernie, weren't you at work at that time?
I was, but I wasn't on the taxpayer's dime either. I wasn't working and being paid with taxpayer dollars.
I agree. You probably weren't, but do we really want to live in a society where every single minor transgression has the full authority of whatever violation has occurred, whether it be your boss or whether it be the taxpayers? People are going to do things. People are going to edit Wikipedia pages. I think the better thing to do is to attack what they said, and to, if they say something ridiculous, ridicule that, instead of having a society where everything must be punished, every violation must be punished. Yeah, they did this using taxpayer moments, however long it took them to write this, but is that really such a major issue?
Well, I guess the taxpayer should decide that.
I mean, the other thing about this thing is, like, the NYPD has made it known, like, public policy, their new internal policy, possibly their old internal policy, is, like, don't ever do this because it causes embarrassment. But so what the police officers will do is either they'll sign in with an account so the IP address isn't revealed, which is so easy to do that I'm amazed more people don't do it. Or they'll just edit Wikipedia from home, and we won't know that edits like these come from the members of the New York Police Department who we pay to, you know, not shoot innocent people is a big part of their job. To not put innocent people into chokeholds is a big part of their job. And we will no longer know that the rank and file of the New York Police Department, at least some of them, think that these sorts of tactics are so acceptable that they edit Wikipedia to defend them. We're going to lose public debate as a result of this policy, which is being framed as some, like, weird workplace rules issue that is completely irrelevant in my view.
Also, for Wikipedia users in general, you know, I'm willing to say on the air on the station that I think what they were doing was probably by management would be seen as being very good police officers, you know, in the course of their duties, being dishonest about the terrible misdeeds of their department. But it's actually against Wikipedia policy to make contentious edits to an article about a subject with which you personally are connected. So, you know, if they wanted to raise these changes, they could have brought it up on the talk page and let the community come to a consensus. And also, they should have found citations for their edits, which would have brought it out of the realm of debatability and controversy. So they're not very good Wikipedians, even if they're being very, very good cops.
Yeah. Rob, do you think those police officers gave a flying anything about Wikipedia's terms of service?
They may not, but I do. I like Wikipedia.
I agree with you.
I'm impressed that they know how to use computers, and furthermore, that they were able to express themselves on Wikipedia, but as Rob said, they didn't do it properly because their comments were showing bias because of their inherent connection to it, and there's other attributes of the way Wikipedia works, which they're, I'm sure, right now researching to get better and practice their newfound skill. But things like bias and noteworthiness and those come into play when you're using forums like this.
Well, it definitely raises some interesting questions and shows where different sides are coming from. And I welcome the debate because that's the only way you reach any kind of conclusion or change things is by talking about these issues. And along those lines, or the lines of people abusing their positions, we have the punishment that was faced by General Petraeus, who seems to have, well, according to this New York Times editorial, it's astonishing how quickly David Petraeus seems to have bounced back from the sordid aftermath of his extramarital affair, which cost him his job running the Central Intelligence Agency, and added a rap sheet to the carefully managed legacy of the most famous American general of his generation. But he basically wound up getting virtually no punishment at all for the leaks that he was responsible for. Bernie, do you think this might be just a tad hypocritical?
As some folks have called it, a profound double standard. General Petraeus gave 8 bound black books full of classified info with the highest classification levels, like including the names of covert agents, which is a serious felony of itself. He gave these 8 books to his mistress, who was writing a hagiography, like a glowing biography about him. And he also lied to the FBI about doing that, which is another felony. There's probably a whole long laundry list of felonies he's committed in this thing. Yet he's getting a sweet plea deal for a single misdemeanor charge with probably no jail time. And he's still currently advising the White House on classified Iraq stuff. Now, Thomas Drake, one of our HOPE-X speakers, he said this is a blatant double standard because Ed Snowden surely isn't being offered any plea deals to avoid prison time and felony convictions. But despite all the accolades Ed Snowden is getting from civic-minded attorneys around the world, but this is really a joke, this plea.
Well, now, my question then, sort of similar to the last story, do we want to see him prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, or do we want to see those other cases prosecuted along the lines that he was prosecuted, i.e. not seriously?
I think if the law applies to anyone, it should apply equally.
I don't think it's hypocritical to say that what he did for his own benefit should be dealt with more harshly than what people like Snowden and Manning have done for the public's benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But what about less harshly?
Yes.
I think that's what you meant to say.
Okay, well...
I don't remember who was... I don't think it's hypocritical to say that Petraeus should be the one to get more punishment. Of course, I mean, I'm not surprised. This is how power works.
Well, you have to look at motive, too. What was his motivation?
To make himself look good, as far as I know.
Oh, maybe he hoped to get something from the woman, from his mistress. I don't know.
Well, okay, and then you have to look at someone like Edward Snowden, what his motivation was. And, of course, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder. Some people will say he was looking out for the protection of the entire country. Others will say that he was seeking to undermine authority. But in the end, you have to look at the entire big picture and come to a conclusion. Are we better off knowing this information than not knowing this information and judge it based upon that?
The thing is, Ed Snowden is not going to be permitted by law to speak about his motives in a court of law. That's why he can't get a fair trial in this country.
And what law is that?
What law? Espionage.
Okay, so because he was charged under the Espionage Act,
yes,
he is not allowed to
legally motive is not a defense in espionage cases. There's a lot written about this in his and previous espionage cases. You can't even introduce as a defense that you were doing it for good moral reasons. That's not relevant in the court of law. It's not even admissible.
Now, General Petraeus was not charged under that, was he?
No, he wasn't charged with espionage. And he looks like he's only going to get a misdemeanor charge out of this thing. So it's not going to be an issue for him.
And who determines if you get charged?
The federal prosecutor.
Okay, so...
Which is the White House.
The White House basically has direct control over this.
Right. The Department of Justice is part of the executive branch of government, which is headed by the president at the White House.
Well, it doesn't mean that Obama's there deciding who gets charged and who does not get charged, right?
You can bet that Obama was involved somehow with the decision on what's going to happen to Petraeus over this.
Because
Petraeus is advising Obama right now about Iraq stuff.
Bernie, I don't even think it requires that level of direct involvement. This is a thing. I don't think there needs to be a conspiracy for the powerful to get protected, because they're so, like, everyone below, you know, everyone in the Justice Department, like, knows what the powerful people want, even without being directly told. So I don't think it's obvious that Obama had a direct hand in this case, but I also don't think it's a coincidence that he probably got what he wanted.
Maybe he was just borrowing the documents, whereas Snowden was... reselling? No, that doesn't work.
No, that doesn't work. All right. Well, that's something to think about. Something in the news this week. Something else in the news this week. New bit of technology. What's this all about? USB-C. Have you heard about this, Kyle?
Yeah, Type C. If you have Type C, you could be at risk.
Oh, I've heard that before, but never as applied to MacBooks and Chromebooks and things like that. But apparently, yeah, USB-C has arrived. It's a single flavor of cable for all your charging and connectivity needs, according to Gizmodo. Well, that sounds good. That sounds really handy. But apparently, that convenience does not come without a cost. Computers will be more vulnerable than ever to malware attacks from hackers and surveillance agencies alike. Now, the trouble with USB-C stems from the fact that the USB standard isn't very secure. And last year, researchers wrote a piece of malware called Bad USB, which attaches to your computer using USB devices like phone chargers, thumb drives, that kind of thing. And once connected, the malware basically takes over a computer imperceptibly. The scariest part is that the malware is written directly to the USB controller chip's firmware, which means it's virtually undetectable and so far unfixable. Now, before USB-C, there was a way to keep yourself somewhat safe. As long as you kept tabs on your cables and never stuck random USB sticks into your computer, you could theoretically keep it clean. But the bad USB vulnerability still has not been fixed in USB-C, and now the insecure port is the slot where you connect your power supply. You have no choice but to use it every day. If everyone is using the same power charger, it's not just renegade hackers posing as creative professionals in coffee shops that you need to worry about. With USB-C, the surveillance establishment suddenly has a huge incentive to figure out how to sneak a compromised cable into your power hole. Yeah, this is what we're looking at right now. The convenience of one cable into your computer.
Power hole, is that a term we use?
Well, on Gizmodo it is, apparently. Now, it might seem alarmist and paranoid to suggest that the NSA would try to sneak a backdoor into charging cables through manufacturers, except that the agency has been busted trying exactly this kind of scheme. Last year, it was revealed that the NSA paid security firm RSA $10 million to leave a backdoor in their encryption unpatched. There's no telling if or when or how the NSA might try to accomplish something similar with USB-C cables, but it stands to reason they would try. So, wow, you're going to have one cable going to your computer now, one input, and you won't have any choice but to use that. This is really...
What I understand in this is that when you're... People typically charge their mobile devices, their laptops, and things every day, if you're using them on a regular basis. But just plugging, just a plain power port is not a risk for data corrupting your or malware infecting your computer. But now that you have to use an insecure USB-C port to power your computer, it becomes a vulnerability almost every day that you have to be cognizant of, instead of only when you're plugging something into your USB port.
It does actually look like that, and I did a little bit of research about this, and I've often wondered, and just the behavior alone with the older type of USB cable, we are very free about the kinds of power supplies we plug a device in over USB to get some juice for it, because it's sort of disassociated, at least in our minds, from the data portions of our devices. But if you think about it, it's actually kind of already pretty vulnerable, because people do often swap around USB micro or mini USB, more micro this day and age, very freely. We don't think about, well, where was that power supply made, and is there any kind of microelectronics involved with that could be compromised in some way. We don't even think about it, because in our minds it's not possible. I actually don't believe that it's impossible to have added things to it if you had something like a compromised wall wart. It's just not that common, and it would be very difficult or just prohibitively expensive to design and then deploy. But this is even more... I guess intrinsically tied as far as power and data, because as you guys were pointing out and from the article, it's required to use this port whenever you charge. And I read a little bit about Type-C, and apparently the cables themselves, I don't know what part of the standard or where, if this applies on all cases, but the cables themselves will actually be signed and wow. Have encryption and other forms of countermeasures as a part of them. I don't know if that's very wide yet, but from my cursory glance at the standard, it seems that's something they're considering, or something that was a part of that, because it does affect power and data, and they're very, very high speed data at that. So it'll be very interesting to watch this, and we'll have to be very mindful of our cables, and you perhaps might have a cable that you only use for work, and a cable that can only transfer or power a device for your own personal use, and you don't share it or you don't trust other people's cables. Really a crazy leap. Back in the day, you wouldn't be skeptical of someone's parallel port or their SCSI terminator and so on.
Speak for yourself. I always was very suspicious of such things.
I mean, you should have been, because a lot of those connectors also have direct memory access. There was a thing on FireWire that came out fairly recently, but I'm sure SCSI would be a risk as well. But people already charge their most personal computers, that is to say their smartphones, over USB. So this is not a new risk in that sense, but I guess it now applies to more devices.
Mike, there are USB cables that only provide power, like only have the two wires connected.
I'm aware, but I don't own
capable,
one.
But most
do you?
People don't know that, which is unfortunate, because if you use one of those cables, it's kind of like a firewall against any data going into your computer from a power device.
I mean, and some of those cables also will cause your device to be charged more slowly, because they do some, I can handle more current handshaking over the other wires. But as a practical matter, I don't have one. I don't know if you have one, but
I do.
But normal people don't.
I'm not normal.
Neither am I, but this is a particular abnormality that I don't happen to have.
Yeah, I think it's that when the data pins are jumped together, you get a faster charge, or it runs at a higher current rating than when the data pins are not jumped. And I think that's on the connector side. So very often, it's a bit more rare to have cables that prevent that.
I hope this doesn't become the standard. I mean, MacBooks and Chromebooks, fine. But I hope there's always a way that we can avoid having this vulnerability forced on us.
Is this a market opportunity for somebody to make a USB-C condom, that a little adapter that you plug into your computer first, and then you plug whatever kind of power device into it, and not worry about data getting into your computer malware?
I mean, bugging that intermediary device sounds like a great opportunity, because only people with particular security needs are going to buy them.
Okay, well, I would buy one. I would make one, so I was sure that it was good.
You have your assignments. Go design something, and we'll report back in future weeks. But, wow, interesting stuff there. Our phone number, by the way, 212-209-2900. I'd like to hear from our listeners and get some feedback and input. And, of course, you can always write to us here at Off the Hook, OTH@2600.com. Off the Hook comes your way every Wednesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. here on WBAI in New York. And we have a brand new top-level domain. There are hundreds of them now. Do you remember when it just used to be .com, .net, .org, .gov, and a couple of others? And now it's gotten kind of crazy and ridiculous. But they've finally come up with one that I think a lot of us would like to have, but they've made it so unpleasant that I don't think any of us are going to get one. .sucks. Yeah, I am not kidding. There is now going to be a .sucks top-level domain. So you could get, Microsoft.sucks or 2600.sucks or anything .sucks. However, they are controlling this in a rather bizarre way by charging $2,499 to register a .sucks domain. I cannot believe this. I guess what that does, that keeps a lot of people from trying to register a particular company's domain followed by sucks. But it also kind of holds those companies hostage, saying, if you want to prevent criticism, you have to register your own company name, .sucks, and pay a huge amount to do that. And that just seems really, really sleazy. I'm trying to figure out who's behind that so I can at least register them.sucks, because they really deserve it. I don't care if anybody gets 2600.sucks. I do care that you're wasting $2,500 that you could pledge to WBAI or do anything else with. I hope the community reacts against this type of exploitation with the fervor it deserves.
I had noticed that the top-level domains, when they come out, it was basically Network Solutions or whoever is in charge of these things just coming up with new licenses to print money, because you start .anything and there will be certain interests, Microsoft, Google, so on and so on, who will automatically buy their own name .anything. And and we also know from way back that entities like Verizon really like owning domain names critical of themselves.
Yes.
And it's just funny, because it will still only cost you around $9 to come up with a domain that creatively insults anyone you like on one of the old standard.com.net or whatever. You know, you'll be saving $2,490 and getting your point across in a more effective way, because the big effect that all these ridiculous top-level domains that have been coming out over the last year or two have had is that there really isn't much value in them anymore. The market is basically flooded. There's, you know, .kitchens, .bike, you know, whatever, .what have you. And there isn't the cachet in having that anymore, I don't think. I think domain speculators have been hit really hard, which is fun. But it's basically changed the whole landscape of how these things are worked and how they're perceived.
Well, the name of the company is Vox Populi. Am I saying that right, Kyle? It's
Vox Populi.
Yeah, that's, I don't know what, P-O-P-U-L-I, right?
Yes.
That's Latin for Voice of the People.
Vox Populi.
Oh, thank you, Bernie. All right, well, then I guess that's the site to register your .sucks domain and pay them $2,500 for the privilege.
Somebody should do iTunes Sucks.
And so this is like the initial price. I guess it's going to come down in a bit, but still to a still large but less large number. But I'm just wondering if anyone has yet bought .sucksucks.com. which would be, you know, the standard domain registration price.
Well, I would hurry up and register that now, because odds are one of our listeners will if you don't.
I hope they do. They'll save me $10.
So the article does say it's for trademark names. They have to pay $2,500 or so. But you could, as an individual, register it for a lot less.
Later.
You're right. Yes, I didn't see that.
But why would you register your own name .sucks? You know, it has to be something that you really believe sucks, which is probably a corporate name or a government or a celebrity.
Bloomberg did that.
Yeah, and it takes away, that's another thing that's been happening when each time one of these new domains has been unveiled, is that there will be a grace period where large entities like Microsoft or whoever can buy their own name, reserve their own name ahead of anyone else's chance to go and buy any
names.
Okay,
but you know what? For .sucks, they should be the only ones who aren't allowed to register it, because obviously they don't think they suck or they wouldn't be in business.
That should
be left to somebody else who does believe they suck.
If the provider was worried about the intended use, then yeah, that would be the way it would go, but it's not the way it's going to go.
Is FCC trademarked?
Actually, I think we can probably get that.
I mean, we've talked before on this program about the huge, well into the six figures cost of obtaining one of these top-level domains, and clearly they want to make their money back.
Yeah, well, there's that, too. There's the whole corruption involved in getting it in the first place. But freedom of speech should not be the one suffering, and it always is. All right, 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. We have a full switchboard here. Let's take a phone call or two. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Okay. I called last week about Hillary's server and have some updates on it.
Got some updates for us. Okay, you were the one going out and researching all of this. What did you find out?
The server gave you in Florida. That's correct. It exists there in Palmetto Bay. But that routes the some info or the data to a server in White Plains. And that's on, it's called inbound 10 dot, oh, damn, I forgot. Anyway, is owned by, the domain is owned by John McAfee from McAfee Antivirus.
Is that MX Domains?
That's it. MX, Bernie, what was it?
I thought it was MX something. I thought it was MX
something. MX something.net. And that's owned by John McAfee. McAfee, or however he's. Anyway, and that's it seems like a pretty secure server. Only a couple of ports opened on it, and That's where they I think she routes her emails all through there, although there could be another service since the first server does load balancing. So as the other listener indicated to you in his email. So anyway, if McAfee set up the service Hillary job, because there are only a couple of ports opened, and it's well done, very well done. So basically, that's what I found out since I spoke to you last.
And are you going to be continuing the investigation?
That server is so secure, I can't find out what it's running. I don't. For example, I had told you that the first server was running some F5 hardware and software from called Big IP from F5 Networks. And when I go to try to find out what software, the inbound 10, MX Logic, that's the name, MSLogic.net, when I try to find out what that's running, I can't get it. So it's very secure. There are only two ports opened on it. That's 25 and 554.
And you had to do a port scan to determine that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did.
Yeah, how else would you determine that?
Yeah, so I'm just mentioning that for our listeners. It's like, I'm sure there's probably a million people that are port scanning this IP.
Yeah, I hope. Let's put it that way.
This would all just be so much less complicated if Hillary would have just gone ahead and used Yahoo.com like Sarah Palin.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that Sarah Palin did that. And a lot of people don't know that. I believe Colin Powell admitted to using his private email as well. But apparently they want to hang Hillary because she's the front runner for the Democratic Party. I'm not even interested in that. I'm only interested in the fact that the Republicans claimed that her server is not secure and the government servers are, and I don't believe that because from what I could see, the government servers use Akamai, and that's basically a cloud server. Now, I called the personal computer show after I spoke. Hank Keith told me that the server side of a cloud is identical to the server side of everything else, and it doesn't seem that that's true. It seems that, from what I could see, Hillary's servers are just as secure, if not more secure, than anything the government has, even if it's true that she's not encrypting her emails. So other than that, I think her servers are just as secure and just as good as anything the government is running.
All right. Well, that's the determination reached by our special investigator into the Hillary Clinton email scandal. Hopefully, sir, you will continue your investigations and report back to us in weeks ahead, and we can blow this case wide open. In the meantime, we're going to take some more phone calls. Thanks again for that information. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi, Bob from Islip calling in.
Hi, Bob. What's on your mind?
I was just listening to the show, and I'd like to also comment about the Hillary Clinton email server.
Go ahead.
You guys are like breaking news. I mean, CNN, everybody thinks it's down in Chappaqua, this server, but...
Well, eventually they'll catch up to where we are.
And the other thing is, the USBC, that does stand for condom.
Well, okay.
You need a condom on that type of, and there's a lot of people talking about that.
We've actually found out it's a whole different world these days. You can manage the symptoms, type C.
Yes.
In fact, once you guys get squared away with the fundraiser for WBAI, I mean, you know, providing those kind of USB-C, you know, USB condoms would be.
Well, let me just reassure people that the flash drives that we are trying to give to our listeners are completely safe. We've made them ourselves. Maybe that's not an endorsement, but they're not infected with anything.
Well, before we put them in the mail, that's true.
If the NSA comes and opens up the envelope and inserts something, yeah, I suppose that's possible if BAI listeners are really that much of a target, but I don't really think so.
I doubt it, but you never know.
All right, anything else, caller?
Just about how you guys, you know, CNN, Fox News, everyone's talking about Hillary's email server. You guys are like the only ones, so, you know, 2,600 are the only ones who are actually doing any investigation into this to track it down. And just you're, that caller who was just on, you know.
Well, that's why you should always keep your dial set to 99.5 FM, because you will hear all kinds of investigations and all kinds of theories and conclusions, and it's up to you to decide what makes sense, what does not make sense. Thanks again for that call. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. Let's see who else is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello. I was listening to the show, and I listen to the station all the time. I heard you guys talking about that the Barbie doll.
Yes, we were talking about the Barbie doll.
Yeah, I was interested to know, because you guys have had other programs, and a lot of other different programs have had it as well, too, where people were talking about the radiation from the cell phones. And, you know, especially for kids, how dangerous it is. And then when you guys were talking about the Barbie, I was trying to understand, you know, how the signal was actually going out. It sounded like it was a Wi-Fi kind of signal, and somebody said somewhat similar to the cell phones. Isn't that, like, even more dangerous then? Because from what I understand, especially with the cell phones for kids, that's really where the danger is, no?
Yeah, it is definitely a concern. I guess you can get into the radio, technical aspects of the radio band it uses, but we believe it's an access point. And so it otherwise associates just like anything else you might log on to your wireless network. But what I bet is the case with these is that it's a very low power a transceiver, so that isn't going to be nearly as strong as like a router would broadcast and control and allow many devices to connect to it. This is just a very small device that's only looking for a perhaps more powerful access point that's managing the rest of your home network. But it is valid that there is some radio transmission there, and it's measurable. I'm sure Bernie has some insight too.
It's worth pointing out that Wi-Fi does use 2.4 gigahertz, which is the same frequency band that microwave ovens use. But the power level is, we're talking about milliwatts in the single digits probably for Wi-Fi devices to connect with a home router. So the amount of power is not going to cook any cells in your brain.
Yeah, and by comparison, I know you were talking about some other shows, and the content of that is, I think, up also for debate in one regard or another. But I think when you're talking about toxicity and stuff from radio transmissions, it gets into totally different scale, because really at issue there is where are antennas being placed and how many actual watts, not milliwatts, as Bernie made the distinction, but these transmission sites, how much are they radiating? It's a totally different scale.
You see, my concern is that, it might be milliwatts, might be an inconsequential number, but you got kids sleeping with their Barbie dolls next to their heads. And that's, you know, that's never happened before that we know of, to have that kind of exposure. So even though it might be a tiny number, still could be something that causes health effects down the road. We don't know, because these devices are fairly new, and it takes generations to learn these things.
I mean, or not, just to be clear.
Or not what?
Might be safe. We don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It takes generations to determine these things one way or another. We can't say for sure one way or another. We're going to try and fit in one more phone call. And this is it. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Actually, speaking of the Barbie doll, there was even something else that was quite extraordinary in the news. In New York City, they're going to be starting this listening device. So if there are any gunshots in the street, this microphone device will notify the police. They'll triangulate where this noise event came from, and they're going to be, you know, rushing to the scene to see what happened.
Yeah, it's shot location technology.
Shot Spotter, I think, is the brand.
Yeah.
They have that in other cities, don't they?
Yeah, they've been using it for like over a decade. It's been around a long time.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. This is the first time I've ever heard of that. How does it work with a backfire or the firecracker?
There actually have different sound signatures. A car backfiring or a firecracker actually sound different, and you can analyze that with digital signal processing. Sound different than a gunshot. These systems are actually fairly effective in showing a general area where a gunshot happened if you have a good array of microphones around a city. So I don't see this as a privacy issue at all, unless you consider your gunshots a private issue. But then
let's
use a silencer.
Let's not give people the idea that gunshots are private data. But one thing is for sure, in cities in the United States, it doesn't take long to test the software to make sure it's working perfectly and that they are detecting gunshots and not backfires. Hey, we're out of time. The Personal Computer Show is up next. We will be back next week here at WBAI. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. All right. And Bernie has us turned up. We'll be back next week, as I said. And until then, let's go out with something a little bit belated Irish here on Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. Oh, this mobile phone, it is a curse, and it makes an awful hole in her purse. With her mobile phone, she gets such a thrill, but her smile disappears when she gets the bill. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. On Sunday it rang in the middle of mass, and all the children thought it was great gas. Some people thought it was the angelus, but the priest on the altar was furious. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone. Now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss. She said, hang on now till I answer this. Last week I was courting her in me car, and she was letting me go too far. The next thing her mobile phone did ring, just as I was about to put me hand on her. For a girlfriend, now you see, my advice to you would be, if the girl that you fancy has a mobile phone, don't bother about her, just leave her alone. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone, now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss, she said, hang on now till I answer this. Oh, my girlfriend has a mobile phone, now we can never have a minute alone. The other night I asked her for a kiss, she said, hang on now till I answer this.
Hello, is that Finna 2222?
No, this is Finna 2222.
I'm sorry for getting you out of the bed.
I'm sure I had to come down and answer the phone anyway.
Had to answer the phone anyway. Oh, my. Hey, will you look at the time? It's 8 o'clock here on WBAI. This is WBAI 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. But because it's 8 o'clock on March the 18th, that means it's time for the Personal Computer Shoe. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Right, Hank?
Hello, world. This is Hank Key, and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. And do we have a show for you this evening? We have Dan Rosenbaum lined up. We have Alfred Poor lined up. And we have David Perry lined up. And we're going to give you the latest of what's happening in personal computing. Before we start, let me just make a brief announcement about a news item that came across on Google. Google has announced that their Play Store, they're going to actually test out some of the, actually not some, they're going to be testing all the apps before they make it available. They should have done this before. Well, better late than never. And you know how it is when you get malware and they say, well, it's not my fault. Well, it is Google's fault for not testing it out. So now, like Apple, they will test out the apps. They will run some tests on it. They said that they have a set of algorithms, and human beings will weed it out. And, you know, if anything that's rogue, they're going to keep it out. That's the good news. We have Dan Rosenbaum on the air with us. And Dan is, Dan, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Dan, you represent a company called Center Media or something like that?
Center Ring Media.
What is that anyway?
Center Ring Media is a small publishing company. We have newsletters on wearable technology and health tech, wearable health technology and a whole matrix of other stuff that we're not quite ready to launch yet.
Oh, well, you know, I was talking to you the other day, and we know that with all this technology converging on top of each other, what's the next killer app? Do you think you can address that?
I'm putting my money down on wearable technology. I think the idea that there are 3 billion people in the world who can get at the Internet reasonably easily and a trillion sensors that came online last year, and, you know, everyone's carrying smartphones and wearing one thing or another already, whether they're aware that they're sort of bedecked in sensors or not, people are going to figure out what to do with that, how to make lives more convenient, better, maybe help cure or manage a disease or two.
Well, you know, there is an area that I know we've been talking about for the longest time, and that's speech. And we said 10 years ago, in 5 years, you know, we'd be able to use a computer for speech, and then 5 years went by, and then we say another 5 years. Is it going to be something where it's like just a little bit beyond the edge and we're still waiting for it, or it's going to be something real, let's say, by 2020?
Well, there's a long tradition of technologies that have been 5 years away for 15 years.
And then some.
speech is one of them. There are display technologies, you know, the OLEDs or organic LEDs have been 5 years away for about 15 years. So we're starting to see some things begin to come around the curve. You know, people complain that the speech recognition doesn't work, and they complain about it very bitterly to Siri or their dictation programs. You need to set your expectation a little bit, but you know we're getting there, and I think it's a whole lot more than 5 years that we're looking at. Reasonably accurate dictation, reasonably accurate voice control of computer technology.
Well, do you think that it's more right now it's the expectation, or do you think that most of the tools are basically there? It's a question of coming up with standards to tie them all in, because I know that I personally have a main concern about all this stuff and where is the security, because that's a lot of information floating around, and with the government we have, I don't feel comfortable.
I would agree with you about that. Certainly, the idea of security is a big one, and sort of paradoxically, it's become bigger as people sort of give up their privacy more and more. I'm trying to think how to get at this exactly. Our privacy has a price, and the computer industry has pretty much figured out what that price is, and it's really low. You know, we as consumers seem to be perfectly comfortable giving up our birthright for something less than a bowl of porridge.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because then I know that as a publisher, that would be something foremost in your mind that you're going to harp on if people are remiss in it.
Yes, absolutely, and as a publisher, I'm very sensitive to the information that people entrust to me, and you know how not to abuse it. But when you look at a company like Google, which gives you such fabulous utility at the cost of reading all your email and knowing where you are at all times,
and a map and a video of where you live.
And a video of where you live. I mean, here's a funny story, or maybe a not so funny story about it. I moved into the house I'm living in now about 4 years ago, And as we were unloading some stuff into the house, the Google Street Maps car came by.
You're kidding.
before that, my house had not been in the Street View zone. So it came by, and I sort of looked for a couple of weeks and didn't see it, and then forgot about it. We had a housewarming party about 4 months later, and I sent out the invitation. So someone sent me an email saying, "Hey, who is that in the pink sweatsuit?" So what pink sweatsuits? Well, look at Google Street View, and they caught a picture of someone in my family wearing a pink sweatsuit carrying a heavy box into the door.
Don't tell me it was your wife.
It wasn't my wife, but let's leave alone who exactly it was.
Okay. Hey, Dan, you know, this coming Saturday is the 40th annual Trenton Computer Festival, and you're our keynote speaker there. And I know that you selected a topic that a lot of people are looking forward to. And you refer to it as approaching singularity. Can you, let's say layman's term, tell me what singularity means?
Well, singularity is the idea that people in computers sort of become indistinguishable from each other. So we are loading ourselves with so much technology, not just what we carry, but increasingly what we put on and what we put inside our bodies. You know, I'm very big on wearable technology. There are people who are very excited about implantable technology. Now, some of that is medical. Some of that is sort of extra medical, and the folks that do the body modification which, you know, is kind of creepy to me, but I understand the impulse, and I think it's going to become more and more mainstream as time goes on. And when you think about this, for any length of time, you realize that implantable technology is not a new thing. Implantable technology has been around for more than 50 years. And
pacemakers is a good example.
Right, pacemakers. How many people do you know have pacemakers?
My sister.
that's implantable technology. Mm-hmm. That is a piece of gear that gets put into your body to make it operate better. And as pacemakers have been getting more and more sophisticated, those pacemakers become programmable. They become self-programmable. They become chargeable. You can put put some contactless charging on it, so you don't even need to go in every 5 years and change the battery. You can update the programming. You can pull data off it. This is implantable technology. This is a very big deal. And like most interesting technologies, it has come into our lives without a great deal of thought.
I know that. Dan, you know what? You're going to be at the Trenton Computer Festival, and you're going to give a great talk, and I just want everyone to know that the talk is around, what, 2:30, 2:35 at the College of New Jersey. And when you're speaking, by the way, everyone will come to a standstill. There'll be no other talks. You're the only one everyone's going to be listening to.
Oh, no pressure there.
Listen, I know you have a busy schedule, so let me just say I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Thanks very much. I'm really looking forward to giving the talk.
Okay, take care, Dan, and I'll see you Saturday.
Take care, Hank.
All right, bye. And we have Dr. Alfred Poor with us. Alfred, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, okay. Listen, last week we had a presentation by Tim Cook and his colleagues. And I don't know if I was watching a business presentation or I was watching a magic show. And let me comment first about the Apple notebook. And this bothered me, okay, because they kind of alluded to it. And, one of the things that I always talk about is that form follows function. And I'm from the old school, and, you know, you define your functional needs and the architecture of the form. It has to be able to house all the functional features you need. Well, this Apple notebook seems to be just the opposite, where you come up with a work of art and you see what you can put on it, you know? And I mean, how else can you explain the design of a computer notebook with only a single physical USB-C port? Single port only that, you know, you put your USB drive on, display port on, you use that to power up your unit, HDMI, VGA. And, of course, what they didn't tell you is you need all these special add-on cables. But if you think you're going to put a little hub on and be able to put all the other things on, you better make sure it's a powered hub, because if you try to put all that on, you're not going to have enough power. And, you know, I normally don't comment on a product until I've actually gotten more, you know, information on field work. But I was just watching the audience, listening to the presentation, and, you know, most of them were journalists sitting there. And when it was announced that they have this USB-C port, one single port that does all these functions, they were applauding, like, wow, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm saying, what? Are they kidding? Hey, Alfred, or am I off base?
No, no, that's the famous Apple reality distortion field at work.
Oh, so, boy.
Another instance of that that is exactly what I wanted to talk about.
Go right ahead.
All right, well, so Joe King sent me a note about how Tim Cook was on, from Apple, was on the Cramer.
Right, he was on Jim Cramer, Mad Money.
Mad Money show, right. And they were both apparently just jumping out of their skins, excited about all these people are going to buy Apple Watches so that they can be in medical trials.
Yeah, and they even said that the doctors may require you to get it, too.